Welcome to the Aesthetic City podcast. In this show, we aim to discover how to go forward and create a more livable, beautiful, and healthy built environment. I'm Ruben Hansen, your host and founder of the Aesthetic City. Today's guest is an entrepreneur based in New York City. As an experienced and successful startup founder, he is now on the path of disrupting the way we construct our buildings using AI and robotics. Potentially, his new company, Monumental Labs, could pave the way for more ornate, detailed buildings on a larger scale and for lower cost than we could possibly fathom. So without further ado, please welcome Micah Springgoot. So welcome, Micah. Thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me, Ruben.
Yeah, wonderful. So first of all, could you tell a bit about your background and what you did before your current, before setting up your current company? And of course, what led you to, found Monumental Labs?
So my background really has nothing to do with architecture or construction. Mm-hmm. I did want to be an architect growing up. That was my childhood dream. I grew up in New York and experienced some of the best buildings in the world, be it Beaux-Arts or Art Deco buildings here, and always imagined I could build those types of things and design great buildings.
Yeah.
But I interned at an architecture firm a couple of times in high school. And the more I learned about the profession, saw what was getting built, I thought, well, I'm not sure I'll be able to build those great things if I just go into architecture. So different interests took over. I ended up studying Chinese politics and learning Mandarin. I worked for the U.S. government in national security roles. And then I eventually found it wasn't as exciting as I hoped, and I ended up going into startups. I was in China, ended up being part of the team running Groupon China as we launched in that country, and I was hooked on the thrill of startups. And I came back to the States, I went to San Francisco, and I started two companies in that time. One of them was a legal tech software for law firms, did quite well. And then had another company during COVID, a video chat company that didn't grow quite as fast as we wanted. So that's my background, is in building companies and entrepreneurship. And while this was going on, this is a career in front of a screen. I came back to that original core love for architecture and the built environment. And I started stone carving. I took classes in stone carving at the Art Students League of New York. An amazing resource if you're in New York. They're not too expensive. You can go for 3 hours a day and learn how to carve or mold in clay. A really great place. And, I was just using a hammer and chisel and enjoying all of the time in front of the stone.
Yeah.
And I was trying to figure out how do we, I was trying to figure out all of these things that I saw around New York that I was absolutely floored by. How did they come to be? How do they even exist? It seems so impossible to me looking at new construction that something like this was even possible. And that's why I started stone carving. And then it became an exploration of how do I make this relevant in a modern time? Because you sit there and you realize, oh, this is very slow. This requires a lot of patience. And we know developers are not going to be spending time and money waiting around for this anymore. You have to stay on schedule. You have to do it within budget. So I started going out to Italy, where there is this burgeoning group of people who are working with robots. They're doing it mostly. They're like atelier for high-end artworks, and they're using CNC machines to carve these beautiful stone artworks and working with artists to make them. And I said, how do we bring this to the States? How do we bring this to architecture, not just high-end art, but how do we make it cheap enough and ubiquitous enough to find its way into the built environment? And so that's where I got the idea to found Monumental Labs. It's the whole point of Monumental Labs is to rekindle that feeling of great buildings that I felt growing up, going into Grand Central Station, seeing the vaulted ceiling and those massive stone pillars and like feeling like you belong to a space. There's that awe and reverence we feel in those spaces. And I just wanted to bring that back. So we are basically committed to unleashing a renaissance, to building technology and infrastructure to make that happen. And also to make sustainable cities, because we're starting with stone. And stone is not only my favorite material aesthetically, it is the most sustainable material we have. And we can get more into that later. But I wanted to make it possible to do this. And maybe later we even go into wood and terracotta and metal again. Those are the goals, to turn these materials from luxury materials into things that we can mm-hmm. use on a mass scale again.
Yeah. So where did you get the know-how to start working with robots? Are you in a team with someone, or how did you get kind of this knowledge together, and where did you find the robot, and just the practical stuff? How did you get that up and running?
I started working on it in early 2022. I was trying to figure out how to make this work. Did I have to hire technology people? Did I have to build a robot from scratch? And it turns out, no, there are capable robots developed, you know, using KUKA arms. And then there are folks in Italy who then build software for them to make it a little easier to use. And you can purchase these robots off the shelf. You know, it takes a lot of learning. They will help train you. I went out to Italy to get training a bunch of times. I took courses. I learned how to do stuff on 3D, you know, 3D CAD, CAM modeling, and all that kind of stuff. And then you have to find the right people to bring around to you. The most important thing for us is hiring design talent. So I brought on an amazing designer, Daniel Williams, who can do all of the digital stuff and is a stone carver. He worked for, you know, great studios, Barry Ball, Jeff Koons. And so he helps, you know, us figure out how to implement everything on a day-to-day basis. Then we started hiring stone carvers. We now have 3 stone carvers in total. And we'll be hiring 2 or 3 more. But it started with raising a little money, getting people aligned around your vision, getting people excited to put money, because there's both an exciting project here and there's going to be a financial return for people. And from that, you know, we turned it into finding a robot. We found a space. We partnered with a longtime stone fabrication company here in New York, Petrillo Stone Corp.
Yep.
They've been doing this since 1907. They have this massive plant outside of the border of New York. And so all of a sudden, you know, from nothing, I had money, I had robots, or I had one robot to start, and I had a space to put the robot and some experience to work with. So that's how I brought it all together. And we started production in July of this year, in 2023. We've really been operating for 4 months with just that robot. Our second robot comes in January, and it's been working great so far.
Cool. So how has the market reception been? Is there already companies coming forward? Like, hey, we want Monumental Labs to create something for our project, or...
Yeah, you know, the low-hanging fruit here was artists. Artists are constantly building things, creating things that they can sell or put in a museum. Typically here in the United States, they're doing stuff in clay, and then they're getting it cast in bronze, or they're putting in terracotta. But there's no stone infrastructure here. And so the first thing we did was we brought back the infrastructure to create things in marble and limestone again. And all of a sudden these people who only had the option to cast in stone or to cast in bronze were coming to us and saying, hey, I've got this amazing work. Let's make a marble version of it, or let's explore something new. Or now that infrastructure is there, we have lines out the door basically of artists who want to create this stuff. Our first robot is fully booked into the future.
Yeah.
And then we started getting some restoration commissions. We just did restoration on the 1884 Villard houses in New York in Midtown, part of the New York Palace Hotel. We replaced a bunch of ornament there that had completely deteriorated. We have a few more of those restorations coming up, which I can announce soon. And now we're getting architectural commissions from major architecture firms.
Wow.
We're doing a set of 6 gargoyles to go on a tower at a major university here in the United States. We have a couple more projects in the works. And we have developers coming to us who want to build new neo-Gothic or neo Art Deco buildings, and they want to make them ornamented. And they say, what's your budget? You can do a lot for $300K, you can do this. For $100K, you can do a cool, great doorway. For $1 million, we can make this every bit as comparable to anything that was built before 1940.
Wow.
So that's the type of clientele we're starting to get. I mean, it's very early. We've just done this in the last 4 months, and we're going to get our second robot, and we're going to, I think, grow even more from there.
Wow. So it's already taking off, basically.
Yeah. It's we haven't really done any outreach on this, and people see our Twitter, they see our Instagram, and they come to us, but that has been enough to keep us busy. And it's now a lot of word of mouth, people doing a project and telling their buddies in the industry what we've been doing, and it just keeps growing. Mm-hmm.
Wow. So, okay, before going to like kind of your vision of where this could go, first, a bit of the practical side. So what's the most expensive part of running this business? Is it the material? Is it like where can you shave down more of the costs? Because that's often the questions I get.
70 to 80% of this, the cost of stone is the fabrication, is the making of it. The cost of the stone itself is maybe, when we're talking about a sculptural or ornamental piece, the cost of the stone itself is 10%. It's not significant. The price of stone is important when we start talking about structural stone, but in terms of ornament, it's a very small part. Transportation, maybe another 5%, maybe 10%, depending on the prices. But really, it's all about the time spent to design it, to mill it, and to hand finish it.
Yeah.
So, you have to set up the robot. So there's a little cost there, but we have to program the robot. We've got to tell the robot what to carve. We've got to explain we've got to simulate how the arm is supposed to move and how it's supposed to, what tools to use. It's not really automated yet. So it's still, CNC is still kind of a dumb process where it doesn't have any sensors. It only understands the XYZ plane, and you have to tell it what's there and what to do. Yeah. And then once it's done, it mills, and there's the cost of water and electricity, not super high. So the more we can mill, the better. And then you got a hand carve. Nothing comes off this machine ready to go out without hand finishing. And that's chisels, rasps, sandpaper, drill bits, Dremel tools. And when you're talking about high-end artwork, that can be very, very significant and still make up 50% or more of the cost of making these pieces. If you're talking architectural stone, where it's simpler planes, it's more craft rather than high-end art, it's less. And so we can actually do more in architecture easily. But if we're talking about reducing the cost, and I'll tell a little bit about that.
Yeah,
it's reducing all of the setup and need to design around the robot and need to hand finish.
Yeah.
As we get into artificial intelligence taking over and having sensors and they can sense their environment, that cost is going to plummet. I think the machine will work 3x faster, and the cost of setting it up will come down significantly. So overall, I think we're going to get 5-6x cheaper than what we're at today.
Yeah.
So the next 5 to 10 years is going to be huge for seeing those cost reductions happen.
Wow. Yeah. So this same architectural piece that would now be 100,000 would be 20,000, for example.
Here's a good example. Patience and Fortitude are the stone lions sitting outside the New York Public Library. They were built in, I think, 1911 at a cost in today's dollars of around $415,000. Today, for two of them, today we think we could do these two lions for the cost of $200,000. These are massive, like 10-foot lions. They're huge.
Yeah.
I believe the cost will be under $100,000, maybe $60,000, $70,000, $80,000 in 10 years. So maybe even less, depending on how well the AI takes over that
point. Yeah. Wow. And originally, one more time, what was the original cost?
I think it's like $415,000 in 2023 dollars.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So in 1911,
So we're already under half the cost of what we produced these for using our machines. And we will get to, under a quarter, or maybe, 20% of the cost of back in the day.
Yeah, that's spectacular. Yeah. Yeah, because that's often the big argument you get against. Well, I often say on my channel, I want things to be more beautiful, and I believe ornament has some role to play in that. And then, yeah, but it's super expensive. Well, yeah, it is, but with such technologies, the cost can come down, and it will always cost a bit extra to have ornament. But if it's made out of a high quality stone, this ornament will, I mean, it will keep on adding value for hundreds, sometimes even thousands of years. That's a whole different discussion.
And developers see that it adds value immediately.
Yeah.
The example here where I live in New York on the Upper East Side and Upper West Side, everything, almost every new luxury tower is being built with stone cladding. Mm-hmm. This didn't happen until about, 10 years ago where this started, and it's really picked up in the last 3 to 5 years where everything is adorned limestone. And these are the highest end buildings because they realize the value of making something that has that connection to the neighborhood, that has that desirable material, that looks beautiful. Mm-hmm. I don't know why it took developers so long to realize that this was possible, but it did take them this long. And I think also the cost of stone has come down with more automation, even from the quarry. We're not the only CNC outfit out there, but most of the CNC work is done cutting blocks, and even that, the cost of that has been going down, not low enough to handle the vast majority of the market yet, but big gains over the last 10 years for sure.
Yeah. So the hand finishing part, in what ways could that be made cheaper? Because that's still challenging because you're going to need people for now to do that, or other. Any technological solutions you see for hand finishing as well coming up? I mean, maybe.
Yeah, I think there's always going to be hand finishers. Mm-hmm. I think there's certain things a human can do that a machine can't. And that's very clear with our current machines and what a human can do using all sorts of tools and chisels and their judgment and doing these minuscule changes that really bring out the work. That's very, very useful for high-end art. When you're inspecting something up close. But the fact is, we're going to get bottlenecked. There are not enough people out there to do all the hand finishing that have that level of skill today that we can rely on that in the future. And so we're going to have to get better at doing that with the machine. And so these AI-enabled robots that have sensors, that have cameras and basically can see and react to their environment, they're going to be able to use tools, not just the mill bits that we currently put on the robot, but they're going to be able to pick up a pneumatic chisel, and they're going to be able to pick up a rasp, and they're going to be able to make the marks of a human sculptor. And we're going to be able to teach them how to make the marks like a human makes them. And so that's going to come out. I'd say that's more of a 10-year timeline.
Yeah.
But that will reduce the need for more hand finishing, or just push the limits of what we can do. You know, if we can do more with robots, the hand finishers can work on even more complex designs.
Yeah,
we can do bigger, we can do more detailed, better in every single way, with the same budget.
Yeah. So what's your vision for in like 40, 50 years? That's maybe a long timeline, but what is your vision of how architecture could change and how our cities could change when we use robotics, AI?
I want us to build cities. And I think we will be able to build cities like Paris or Florence or turn of the century New York and be able to do this at a fraction of the cost. Mm-hmm. Beauty we will have the splendor of the buildings from the past. Naturally, it will become affordable, it'll be cost effective. And we'll have sustainability if we're building with more stone, if we're building with wood and other natural materials.
Yeah.
So what's going to happen, I think, is we're going to see neo-traditional architecture getting better. I talk to a lot of neo-traditional architects, and we all know and we all admit that what is built today is generally not at the same level of grandeur or detail or splendor of what came before World War II. And they admit this, and they say, well, there's a reason for this. We don't have the ecosystem of craftspeople who can come in and help us. We have higher labor costs. We have to turn to cast stone instead of using natural stone because we can make molds. And we are actively trying to solve that for them. And they know that this technology will help them make comparable buildings to what we had in the past. And then there's modern architects or I would say contemporary architects who want to build in really detailed, new, creative ways, and they will have the opportunity to do that. I'm not one of these people who thinks everything needs to look like it came from Rome or Greece. In fact, every single element, you know, Paris was its own new style. New York Art Deco was its own new style.
Yeah,
we are going to invent a new style. I'm not sure exactly what that is, but it exists in somebody's head today, and we will have the infrastructure for them to do it. And we will hire digital designers who can help them implement that. And we will use AI when necessary to make that faster and easier and to aid designers in doing this, but it will all be human led and then enabled by our technology.
Yeah.
And so we'll see new things. We'll see radical things built out of stone that we've never seen before. And it will be very exciting. And some people will dislike them. And I think that's fine. And some people will embrace them, and we'll see where it takes us. But I think we'll be more building. And I think for the last 70 years, we've taken a break from stone, maybe the last 100 plus years when we talk about steel and concrete. But I think we will return to an age where everything is built out of stone and wood. It's these are the best materials to build in, and our technology will enable us to build with those materials as well as any other material.
Yeah. Yeah. Because stone, you take it out of the earth, you can use literally electrical machinery for that. You can transport it electrically, and then you can work it electrically and lift it electrically in place. Only thing you need is perhaps some mortar to fit it in place. And except when we, if we ever start to use kind of Inca drywalling again, but but I'm also a huge believer in the opportunities of stone. And I think it's crazy that's being overseen, but at some point there will be more attention to this, I believe. But
Think about stone. You know, stone is the only material that doesn't have to be in wood, but stone doesn't have to be manufactured.
Yeah.
Concrete, steel, it's a massive, wasteful manufacturing process. We are simply lifting stone out of the ground. And if you want to make concrete, you still need to lift stone out of the ground, and then you got to grind it up and you've got to heat it to 2000 degrees. So it is the obvious solution to the sustainability problem in our city.
Yeah. One of the craziest things, which I was made to realize by having a talk with Stone Masonry Company, is that for concrete, you need like 5 pits in the ground or 4 pits in the ground for the different materials, for sand, gravel, limestone, for iron ore, just to make all the different components that go into reinforced concrete. And limestone, you can literally, for the same pit where you take the limestone to crush and turn into cement, you can also just take limestone blocks, which you can reuse easily just as a building material. So the same pit you dig in the ground, you can take limestone out for concrete, which you still need to process, or you can just take limestone blocks out. Yeah, that really makes me think, like, why are we not building with stone? But anyway.
It's cost, you know. It's just that steel and concrete are cheaper to make right now. And they're cheaper because we didn't have the capacity to manipulate stone easily over the last 100 years like we did these other materials. That will, with robotics, that is absolutely going to change.
Yeah. So what other opportunities do you see for robotics in the construction industry, apart from cutting rocks and slicing stone?
Well, I mean, for robotics and AI, I mean, it's really any material that's made in 3D. With AI, we can quickly generate how to both design something in 3D and how to fabricate it in 3D without requiring a ton of human work to program and to make it happen. So a lot of these difficult processes that require a lot of human labor are going to be automatic. And so we can create molds, we can do this in wood, we can pour, we can do terracotta, we can do metal as well using these same technologies. Mm-hmm. Maybe we'll be working on developing that. Maybe it'll be another company, but it's going to happen. And it will just make design so much easier for architects. I'm already talking to companies who are helping architects design in with AI that will allow them to put ornament in and just make that design process so much easier. The next couple of decades are really going to look very, very different in the design field.
Mm-hmm. What is your, have you been playing around as well with Midjourney and other image creators already to create new types of architecture? And what's your view on what that will change in the world of architecture?
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of great ideas come out of there, a lot of weird stuff. A lot has to happen where you have to train some of these models specifically on architecture, but it's totally within the realm of possibility, and there are already folks working on it. So I think a lot more time will be able to be spent, and it will take away a lot of the boring stuff, like where do I put my mm-hmm. HVAC, and you know, where do I, you know, how do I arrange the bathrooms in here that's most efficient? And so when that happens, architects will spend more time on details and design and less on, you know, project management. I think it will help make a better profession.
Yeah. I can imagine there's a lot of overhead in the profession, which just the boring stuff you just got to do, but you don't want to do as an architect. Like, everybody wants to be creative. Then the question is, of course, how much creativity are we going to outsource to the computer, and how much creativity are we going to keep? Are we just going to be selectors of the outcomes of prompts?
I think about it, though, as an architect used to have this vast ecosystem of designers and craftspeople that they could call on to say, hey, I've got this freeze here. I need a design for it. And it'll be folks like us. It'll be Monumental Labs that's helping them to do that. And we're going to use AI, right? Like, why start with a blank slate when I can input what I want and get a general idea that might be 50% of the way there? And then our team of digital designers can go into ZBrush and get things the way they really want to get them. These are simply tools. They're simply going to be tools that creative individuals use to shape the environment. You might get some cool experiments where you let the AI design the entire building and you get some weird stuff. And honestly, I think that's fun and interesting.
Yeah.
But we all know how it's going to end up happening, which is that humans have preferences and they'll shape their environment.
I think it's super promising that you are working on this with Monumental Labs, because your company is one of those few and rare companies that are really making a dent in what is actually possible. Because a lot of things, I think, depend on an industry being organized in a certain way, like how the construction industry works. They work with concrete. If they have to use a different material, it will be extra expensive because they're not used to it, and they need to train people differently or they need different machinery. So, for example, to start building with stone, the industry would need to change on some level, and that would be hard.
You have to create both scale and an ecosystem, because we're basically starting from scratch. It's not that there aren't great sculptors out there. There are. There are great designers out there. They just don't talk to each other. The architects and the designers, they're in separate worlds. The real estate folks, they operate in different circles. And what our aim is basically to become vertically integrated, so that from quarry to design to production, everything can be done in one place. We can get massive deals on sourcing the material because we're large. We can bring the best designers in the world into this ecosystem and have them work with the architecture firms and the developers that are trying to make these amazing properties. Right now those folks are making websites, or they're making movies or video games, and there's not really a lot of money in it in the built environment. And we will change the dynamics of who can come into this industry and find and make a career and leave their mark on the built environment. Already we're doing that, but we will hopefully be getting much, much bigger to be able to do this on a massive scale.
Yeah. So what's your hopes for the future and also your company? What's kind of your growth outlook for the coming years? Where do you feel it's going?
Well, a lot of it depends on how we finance the company. We've raised a little money to get started from some folks in Silicon Valley who are very interested in what we're doing. We'll have, you know, probably 3-4 robots by the end of next year. And then depending on whether we grow organically and try to double or triple every year, or whether we can raise a massive round and open, let's say, the Gigafactory, in Indiana, where we can, you know, deal with stone on a massive scale. So let's say it takes $10 or $20 million to get set up. There's just a time horizon when that money can come in. Basically, we want to have a production facility right next to the main quarries that feed the construction industry in the United States, yeah. which are on the East Coast, at least it's Indiana. And then we also want to have robots in key endpoints like New York City, Chicago, mm-hmm. Somewhere in the South, somewhere in Texas, where you can do some of that final design and be close to the designers and the architects. So really, it seems to me almost like an inevitability that we will get there, because there should be endless demand. Especially as we drive the cost down. And just a matter of how we put together the company to make that happen.
I can imagine you can, of course, also start offering software or to design specific parts of the building and then integrating that with your kind of gigafactory-ish machine halls where computers create the components, putting together. You could even ship out whole building parts from there.
All of this, so much of this work, I mean, it feels like I'm stepping back like 20 years in the past from coming from building software companies. Mm-hmm. All of this can be attacked. There's so many things that you don't even need AI. You just need like some automation software and some intuitive interfaces and train people how to use them. The cost will be brought down just by some simple changes in how we operate. You know, a lot of the cost is like getting the stone from this part of the factory to that part of the factory to chopping off this bit of it. And you know, there are some factories of stone that do it in quite an efficient way, mostly in Italy. The lumber industry does this in a quite efficient way. So even just kind of catching up to how other industries are managing their assembly lines, essentially, mm-hmm. We will get way cheaper. Yeah. And then it's applying the latest tech, right? It's applying AI to automating even these things that today will take us a day of human labor to do, will just be done automatically.
Yeah, I follow what Elon Musk is doing with his factories and how they are, going back to first principles and really cutting down costs, just to see like how far can you reduce, what can you eliminate and what can you simplify to get something as cheap as possible. And I think that's very applicable to this business as well, where you can...
And we're basically following the Tesla strategy. We are servicing clients who are making high-end luxury developments at this point, or definitely over $500, maybe $600 plus per square foot. And that's who can afford stone facades today. And we are helping them do that better and more efficiently and do more, you know, details on it. Over time, I think we're going to get to the point where even, you know, upper middle income housing can have some really beautiful things included in it. So like $300 square foot housing in the US, where the stone facades pencil out. And then the big change will be when we can actually move from stone as a facade material and just a skin into the actual structure. That's going to require some regulatory change. It's going to require, you know, because our building codes don't support it, it's going to require the quarries change how they cut the stone, because everything is built around the slab industry these days, and more automation there. But we will get there. There's a chicken and egg problem right now, but we think we can get to a point where structural stone is the default.
Yeah. What's your favorite statue you would like to copy or mass produce?
Mass produce. I think.
Well, yeah.
The cool thing about what we do is the customization isn't that crazy an extra cost. So you can come to me and say, I want a bust. I don't need the bust of Alexander Hamilton or the Lincoln bust that we've done a few of for some clients, but we can put the developer's family on their building or all of their heroes on their building and not too time intensive and difficult a manner. And so this mass customization that we'll get out of this is really, I think, what will drive a lot of the adoption. I think that's the coolest part. But also in terms of buildings I'd like to copy, I think we should go ahead and be able to copy buildings from the past that have been demolished. Penn Station being one of them, the Singer Building in New York. It would be a dream to be able to find a developer and get some buy-in from the local governments to say, hey, let's make it easier to copy and bring back these great wonders of the world that we stupidly destroyed.
Yeah, fully agree. And what you said earlier, here in the Netherlands, we have these beautiful, let's say 1920s social housing building blocks, and they still used stone ornament in many of them, and also ornamental brick laid in the most wonderful shapes, like the Amsterdam School of Architecture. And it's crazy what has happened since that is not cost effective anymore where it was back then. That I think labor was then the cheaper part and materials were the were more expensive, but still they were able to create that kind of beauty for social housing. It would be extremely exciting to see that be possible again.
Yeah, if someone says, hey, we have $20,000 to spend, say we're building a 20 unit apartment, you know, we're talking like $1,000 per unit to build some really cool entryway ornament, to do, you know, some sort of, statue on top of it, or a face, or an animal, and have it, have some, really nice brackets and columns just to announce the entryway better. You know, that's all going to be possible. And it's not so much that labor costs, it's not just that labor costs rose, it's just that labor, they could no longer support this ecosystem, just collapsed.
Yeah.
The talent didn't come back. And we don't have a lot of young carvers today. Not in the building trades, but luckily we're finding a lot in the art world that want to do this and understand form, and they're being trained in how to build for architecture. As these come back, there's just going to be people with knowledge, and there's going to be a way to do some of these things cheaply, and we'll educate people on how to do them, and we'll create templates. We'll create our 20 standard doorways that you can modify a little bit and ship them directly to your site and install your Ionic columns with your beautiful crest on top, and you choose which plant you want to put on there, and it will work like clockwork. That's really exciting to me. It's not just these massive, beautiful, huge palatial buildings, but every little apartment infill building can do something interesting.
That's a really interesting point. Also, builders used to work a lot with pattern books before, and those designs were so good that they're still really loved. And I think here in the Netherlands, they probably also use quite some patterns because, you can literally mass produce certain building types which are extremely pleasing to the eye, which would be a catalog for you and your company, and which would make it far easier. You could just say, this is a pattern 5A with this type of doorway, and you could just make sure that your machines can make that. You have these settings stored somewhere, and you could make them really fast. I mean, that's something I could imagine.
Yeah, each time we have a design that goes into our system once, it can be reused. And that cuts out a big chunk of the cost. Setup time is less. There's no programming time. It's all been done. The design is already taken care of. That's an idea we've been playing around with, and hopefully we'll be able to do that pretty soon.
Yeah. Yeah. Wonderful. I think, the pattern book can make a comeback. I feel nowadays copying has this bad reputation, just taking inspiration from a pattern book, for example. But that used to be very normal. Just like, okay, well, we just need a lot of houses here. So we're just going to take some of the inspiration. And then if you can work with a supplier of materials and ornament, then it doesn't even have to be cost restrictive, or it can be possible to have beauty there as well and ornament there as well. But
the amazing thing is that, in New York, the great row houses and brownstones, they weren't, a lot of times you think you need to have an owner, an individual come in and say, I want to make this beautiful. And that's where you get an ownership. I see a lot, ownership leads to beautiful things being built rather than just like international financial interests here.
Yeah.
But all of these townhouses and row houses were often built like 20 at a time, each with slightly different designs and patterns. And you just know they had this support infrastructure of these these stone carving companies that could come in and say, yeah, we know how to do this. And yeah, we can do this pattern. And it's completely missing as a support structure now. I hope we get back to that.
Yeah. Well, I can't wait to see the progress on your company. Do you have any final ideas you'd like to share with the audience or final messages or anything at all?
I think that what we're doing is also about, you know, more than just beauty and mm-hmm. and sustainability. I think it's convincing, at least here in the United States, convincing people that we should be building. I think a lot of the problems in our cities and even society are the fact that we hold on to the past, but we don't want to build new things because we know inevitably that it's going to be ugly or ruin our environment or make us feel sad about our environment. And mm-hmm. as we start to build beautiful things, the NIMBY impulse shrinks, the walkable, sustainable, beautiful neighborhoods that are now kind of enclaves for the rich because we don't build them anymore will become more ubiquitous. And we can have middle class, low income, high income, all living in great neighborhoods with great design. We just have to get back to building and building beautifully again.
Yeah. Well, amen. I recognize a lot of my own views in there. So thank you so much, Micah, for joining. I think this has been really a refreshing subject as well, because I don't think like all the people in my audience or just the people amongst my people who I interview normally, a lot of them do a lot with automation, but this is really next level and this is really something that can disrupt. And I think they work with automation, of course, and they work with computers technology, but I'm not sure if they're aware of all the disruption that's about to happen yet.
Yeah, I think it's still fresh and we're still educating people on it.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Ruben.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the Aesthetic City podcast. For more information about Monumental Labs, find our website in the description below. Also, do follow Micah on X. The link is in the description as well. If you like our content and want to support what we do, you can support us in various ways. The easiest way is to give this podcast a favorable review. Another way to support this podcast is to share it with colleagues and friends. You can also follow us on X, subscribe to our YouTube channel, or our Substack newsletter. And finally, the ultimate way to support The Aesthetic City is to become a patron. Find the Patreon link in the description. For more information about this platform, visit theaestheticcity.com. Thank you, until next time.